I'll call the meeting to order, a joint meeting of the Metropolitan International Airport Authority General Aviation Operation Planning and Engineering Committee to order. First order of business will be roll call.
Sheriff Freeman.
Here.
Vice Chair Sullivan.
Here.
And Commissioner Farnsworth.
Here.
All right, and now our Open Meetings Act announcement.
Joint meeting of the MNAA General Aviation Operations Planning and Engineering, the MPC Engineering and Planning Committees for the following reports of Executive Order Number 16, signed by Governor Bill Lee on March 20th, 2020, as amended by Executive Order Number 34, signed by Governor Bill Lee on May 6th, 2020, allowing a governing body to hold meetings by electronic or other means of communication without a quorum being physically present if the governing body determines that meeting electronic means is necessary to prevent spread of COVID-19 or other related epidemics to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public and members of the governing body. All votes taken during this meeting will be by roll call vote.
Thank you very much. The minutes have been sent out. I'll entertain a motion to approve those.
I'll move to approve.
There's a second. All righty, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? All righty, no chair's report, no item for approval. Doug, I think we've got two informational items you're going to walk us through.
That's correct. Yeah, the first item will be about the Nashville Airport. The second item will be about.
This meeting is being recorded.
Second will be about John C. Toon. On the Nashville Airport, we're showing you two things on this slide. The slide on the left side portion is our employments that are by week. And what we're showing is obviously we started going down in late March, hit a bottom around the week of April 12th. And since April 12th, it's been slowly building back up through the end of May. And then over on the right side, it just shows what we budgeted when Marge and I and the staff put together the budget for the remainder of this year and for starting off next year. It showed April, we thought we'd have about 30,000 passengers. We actually have 31,510. In May, we thought we'd have 77,500. We actually had 91,000, and we're still waiting for the final data there. And then the budget for the month of June in Nashville is 5,000 passengers in plane, getting on an airplane a month or a day. And right now, today, we're going to be right at under 5,000, but tomorrow and the next day is over 6,000. So it is showing that I think we're going to continue that trend through June, and we're just hoping that we don't have that double dip that, you know, may come with the coronavirus. But in terms of being on track with our planning and forecasting, we look like we're pretty close so far. So I think that's just an informational item. We want to let you know that we are starting a little bit of a comeback.
Let me ask you one question, if I could. Just to put all this in perspective, normally we would expect to be at what kind of numbers?
A normal day pre-COVID was about 25,000 passengers leaving a day. Now we've gone from less than 500 to about 6,000. So we're on our way back. We're about 20% back. So we were down like 96-97%. We're down only at 8%. But we seem to be gaining some momentum there.
And do you have any sense of how that compares with airports around the country?
Actually, really well. Linda is smiling and Margaret as well, because as commissioners are aware, we're the largest medium hub in the United States, which puts us at number 31. Based on the flights that have been added back over the next couple months, we're at like number 25. When we look at throughput in the nation, that's from TSA. And then some of our major carrier is Southwest, and we're moving up in the Southwest model from below the top 10 list to number 10, and maybe we'll end up by number 8 or so later in this year. So I think our airlines believe Nashville's going to come back, and hopefully we don't have that double dip. So, right. Yeah, so it's
and I hate to interrupt again, but one other thought. Do we have any numbers? I'm just curious. Bob, you may have some insight in this. what's happening at John Toon in terms of those numbers? Are they down a similar amount, or?
I think we would have to compare that by fuel sales.
So fuel sales, it was not hit as hard. I think they're running, they're still down. I think they're probably in the 30% what they had in pre-COVID.
We'll get you an update on that. The best way I look at Toon, having a little bit of time now, is that in the old days, before we extended the runway, we were selling 79,000 gallons a month, and we got up to about 150. So we'll get a fuel sales and see what that volume is for Toon. So
thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Bill, if I may say, I flew into Toon yesterday, and I was in between a Citation and a King Air going in. So I think the activity is picking up just a bit, just from personal experience.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. That's the only update on the Nashville Airport. Now switching over to John Toon. Commissioners participated in a special board committee meeting of the GOPE last week. They saw the slide on the left. During that meeting, the biggest thing I wanted to point out is basically the board's and committee's involvement early at the start with Aeroplex. We are still working with Aeroplex to set up the middle meetings over the next 16 weeks. And then we'll be back again with committee members towards the end of that 16 weeks as well. The scope one that was reported in that meeting is complete. They have the documents and that they need to review and do the inventory. So that's going well. And then I just did an outline of what scope two shows, that they're looking at the forecast, looking at rates, and Jeff Roach and John Corbett are working that really closely. And then based on the guidance that we had heard from the GOPE special meeting that we had last week, we are canceling the notice of availability for the property that's on the east side. And we're working our way through this 16-week process to re-envision what we're going to do at John Toon. So I think we're all on the same track, staff and board and committee members, and we're working to what's this going to be as we want to grow John Toon for the future. So this is the only purpose today was to get the minutes approved and then summarize how's things going at Nashville and how's things going at John Toon. And I'd open it up to any questions that the chair or commissioners might have.
Any questions or comments on the information we received went over last week?
I've got a question for Rob, most likely here. The tie-downs that are presently out there, very limited, they're full right now. And I'm having people overseas. Where, what are we going to do? I'm going to bring an airplane. Got two people bringing airplanes in this week and next week. And I said, so I talked to Matt, and I'm parking one of mine up in front of Granberry's hangar, the two big hangars, Chip Crump. And there's a couple other people doing the same thing. There's no tie downs. We got a fenced-in area that is wide open. I know we've got some concrete slabs off the old destroyed hangars, but I think we need to start figuring out where we can move some more airplanes in to tie down. We don't need to lose anybody no more than we already have.
We'll take a look at that. There's a lot of, I'm worried about tire puncture, yes. Some of the foundation, some of the steel they've cut. We'll take a look at that, about getting that ground down. What makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking 15 or 20 tie-downs, and I'm maybe more at later, hopefully.
Yeah, I know one concern Robert shared with me yesterday is we had a ground incident with a propeller striking an airplane wing or something like that. We're still trying to investigate how did that happen. And looking at some of the pictures, it does look like people were tied down or in close proximity to each other. And I was like, well, who starts an airplane that close to them? You know? So anyway, we're looking into that. It was not like super serious. Nobody was hurt, but we don't want to have an accident.
The tie downs, hopefully, were 172 serious. Now they're coming in with PBMs tied down. There was a Conquest out there a couple days ago tied down. Their wingspan was another 4 or 5 feet.
Yeah,
there was lots of people out there.
Bobby, just one comment, too, about losing customers. I know Gallatin, where I have to keep my plane, it's completely full waiting list. Lebanon is completely full waiting list. I'm not too worried about, I don't know where they're going to move if lose anybody. Certainly don't want to lose anybody. We want to accommodate anybody that can. But every airport in the mid-state, completely full with the waiting.
Now, there's nowhere for them to go, right. But it would be nice to tie your
I agree.
Tie in. I mean, that's all I'm saying. Yeah. There's plenty of room for that 15 or 20 planes.
Okay. Any other questions?
I have 1 minute to vote.
All right. This just shows the last slide that you all saw last week and that bottom of the previous slide where we're canceling those notice availabilities. You'll see those pink areas coming off, and as we develop a plan for June, we'll come back and look at that with commissioners as we go forward. But that's all we have in terms of updates.
Hey, Doug, this is Jimmy real quick.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, what about the grassy area on the south side of the temporary trailer for tie-downs? That way you don't have to penetrate asphalt. You could just put the tie downs in the grass stuff like you do in a flame.
Well, where is he talking about on here?
In that pink area.
He's talking about, here's a gate down here, right here, this area right here.
Yeah. Okay.
It's flat as well.
It is flat. We'll take a look at all the areas, both the grass and the pink area, and see what's the best solution.
Yeah, I mean,
well, he's got them all, okay?
Yeah,
that's why the rest of us don't have them all, okay? There's a big difference there. Thanks, Granberry.
Jimmy, thank you, sir.
All right, anything else from the commissioners?
I think that's it. Meeting adjourned.
All right, good job, everybody.
That was 15 minutes, wasn't too long.
No, it wasn't.
Yep. All right, Commissioner Farnsworth, we already have a quorum. And we can start whenever you would like.
All right, I am ready to start. Let's see, is everybody on that's on the committee?
Okay. And let's see, we're going to get switched. Let us switch our slides. I guess we're ready. We'll switch over to the next presentation, then we'll be good to go.
All right, and it looks like all the committee members are on, so.
And let me just check. Is Commissioner Crumbo on?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm on.
All right.
All right, so I'll call to order the meeting of the FAP committee. And I think everybody has the minutes, and I'd love to, first of all, I think we have to do a roll call. Angela?
Chair Farnsworth?
Here.
Vice Chair Freeman?
Here.
Commissioner Joslin?
Here.
Commissioner Dorge?
Here.
Commissioner Crumbo?
Here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Angela. I think everybody has been sent the minutes. Do I have a motion for approval or are there any changes?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, and Commissioner,
do we need a roll call? I know we did do a roll call in GAOPE.
Yeah, we'll let us go through the electronic meeting announcement to make sure we comply with the state regulations, and then we'll do a quick roll call on the approval of the minutes following.
Okay.
Let's read into that.
Perfect.
MNAA and MPC Finance Administration Properties Committees will be done in accordance with Executive Order Number 16, signed by Governor Bill Lee on March 20, 2020, as amended by Executive Order Number 34, signed by Governor Bill Lee on May 6, 2020, allowing a governing body to hold meetings by electronic or other means of communication without a quorum being physically present if the governing body determines that meeting by electronic means is necessary to prevent the spread of COVID-19 or other related epidemics, to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public and members of the governing body. All votes taken during this meeting will be by roll call vote. And I'll now take a roll call vote for the minutes of the May 13th, 2020 FAP committee. Chair Farnsworth?
Approved.
Vice Chair Freeman?
Here.
Commissioner Joslin?
Here.
Commissioner Dorge?
Approved.
Commissioner Crumbo?
Approved.
Thank you.
All right, minutes are approved. Chair Farnsworth, do you have anything you would like to discuss?
Yep, there's no chair's report for the day, and I know we don't have items for approval, but we do have information items. So, Doug, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you very much. Commissioner, we do have one informational item to just give commissioners an update on the DNA concessions program. And as we move forward over the next 30 days, I'll be in contact with commissioners about a lot of the other issues that are going on financially that we would like to discuss at some point in the future, and even update commissioners on issues regarding legal ramifications. So we'll probably have an executive session in the next, 30 days or so, and I need to organize that as we go forward. But just wanted to preface that, and then I'll turn this over to Linda for the update.
Good morning.
Morning.
So, to do a brief update, I wanted to give you a glimpse on our weekly concession sales. This mimics the earlier slide from Doug, showing that we are coming back strong. Sales week over week are double-digit growth in the 14% to 16% range. We currently have 13 concepts open. We anticipate opening another 3 next week. Any questions on that? Wanted to give you a glimpse at our concourse D plan, and I'm going to actually start at the bottom of the slide just to let you know that for our July 16th opening date of concourse D, we do not anticipate that any of these concepts will be open to the public at that point. The concepts that are currently solidified on Concourse D, you'll see there, they are 8th and Roast, Stellar News, Patricia Nash, and Minute Suites, which are all either about to start construction or are just simply waiting on some capital money to free up from the COVID crisis before they can actually start construction. The other 3 concepts, Buckets, Party Bell, and Burger King, they're in the design process. They're approaching 95%. They should be underway shortly. So the next slide is going to show you what we envision Concourse D looking like during the opening ceremony, which is currently scheduled for July 16th at 2 p.m. That center node area will be carpeted, and we'll have some seating out there. On the land side of the node, the side that is closest to the road, Hudson will have some temporary kiosks in that location, so there will be amenities and services available for the passengers. On the side that faces airside, so that you'll be looking out toward the aircraft, is where we envision putting this seating in that area for the opening ceremony.
And thank you. And I just wanted to back up on one slide, and we'll go back for any questions about the opening. Linda has been working with Margaret very hard to try to, continue to develop the B&A concessions program. The leases have been the problematic with those being signed and executed, and then the capital to start these programs. And so, they know there's a challenge out there, and both of us have reached out to Southwest Airlines and discussed this with them, and they have no reservations with their CEO, Gary Kelly, coming in to do this, to do the ceremony. We even brought it up to the governor's team, and Southwest did something very similar to what you're seeing on this slide and the subsequent slide that Linda presented. That when they opened up a new concourse in Fort Lauderdale, they were unable to have any of the concessions up and running at that point. They're not surprised, and they're not, they don't want to not celebrate this big occasion with us. And so we do have commitments from Gary Kelly. He's going to fly in that morning around 11. We'll have this ceremony at 2. He'll fly out around 5. Governor does plan to come, and Mayor Cooper plans to attend as well. We're just showing a layout here where the stage is,
where the big beautiful windows will be, and you'll be able to look out over the flight line, and hopefully with the Southwest jet parked right outside the window. So I think it'll be a great opportunity for us to share with the community that we're still building, we're still making some progress here, and it'll be a good opportunity. And then that yellow area that cuts through the middle, that's the new terrazzo floors that look remarkable. And if you go across that terrazzo into the area on the land side with the little blue dots and purple dots that in there, that's where Hudson is helping us out to add some, you know, some concessions and those kind of things in there. And I'm not sure if Puckett's is still on board with possibly catering food or something, but that'll be a place where we can socialize depending on what the COVID restrictions are at that point while we celebrate that. So I think we're okay with what we're planning. We have talked to everybody and the brother, and it's a beautiful concourse. It'll look really good, and Tom and his team will have a great media plan to promote what's going on. And this new concourse is key to what Southwest has already been talking about to us in terms of the number of flights that they want to add to Nashville, you know, in the coming months. So they need this concourse.
Is there an art piece?
What's that?
My art piece going to be installed?
Yes, and not only is it going to be installed and looking spectacular, but the LED lights from a certain Asian country have arrived, and they will be installed, and so it will be lit at the same time. So
don't let me down, though.
I won't let you down. Then you're ready.
I'm not worried about the construction. I'm just worried about that piece of
art. It will be there. It will be there. And looking good. So, Linda, I'll turn it back over to you.
All right. So I wanted to give you a glimpse. You may have seen the new Tennessee Brew Works. The dust walls came down about a week ago. We do envision the Tennessee Brew Works and the Tootsie's Lounge to be open sometime during the month of July. We are working to finalize the sublease with Delaware and Markdown in conjunction with Brentwood, which is required before those two open for business. And then, as I mentioned, we do anticipate opening three more concepts next week. They are the CNN, the Gibson, and the In Motion, the newly remodeled In Motion store. The other construction update, which I'm sorry I didn't make this slide, is we are intending to pull down the dust wall from the Tennessee Trading Post on Concourse B tonight. So things are happening, new concepts are opening, and you'll start to see that.
Yeah, two of those concepts that Linda mentioned that are reopening are existing concepts, and just based on the volume of passengers going through, they believe that, you know, there's enough sales to make them profitable. That In Motion store was open, I think, about a week, maybe two, before it was brand new, and it had to close because of the drop in passengers. So they think they can now, you know, make some money, and so that'll be a good thing to see. Okay, that is all we have on the concession side, and we appreciate the commissioners approving the minutes, and just wanted to give you that quick overview of where we're going, but really to introduce the topic grand opening for Concourse D on July 16th, so that everybody had a good understanding of what we were planning to do right there. So, anything, Commissioner Farnsworth, any questions from commissioners? Or
yeah, first of all, I want to thank Linda and her team for all of their work. This Concourse D news is really exciting, and I know it's a really challenging period, but you know, that'll be a bright spot having the Southwest CEO come in. And I just think it's a bright spot and showcases Nashville. So thank you all for the hard work.
Okay. If there's no other business, Commissioner Farnsworth, I think
I do have one more question here, Doug. And this goes back to Tune, and it's on the financial side. You were going to get back to us to let us know what our group decided to do with our tenants for the down period.
Oh, correct. Yeah, I've talked to Margaret about that. I know all the ones, as we mentioned earlier, that had hangers that damaged. I think we have taken care of that. And then I've still got to go back and make sure that the lease is addressing how we're to handle that with those customers that believe they were inconvenienced, and whether we're going to refund that money or
Perfect.
Not. I still owe you that.
Perfect. We just need to, I know we need to get some answers to some people, and I just don't want that to be a PR issue out there. So that'd be great.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Anything else? All right. Would you like to adjourn the
show? All right. So motion for adjournment.
All right.
So move.
Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Stop. There's a man.
How are you, Mom? So you can see.
The meeting of the MNAA Diversity and Workforce Development Committee will be held in accordance with Executive Order Number 16, signed by Governor Bill Lee on March 2020, as amended by Executive Order Number 34, signed by Governor Bill Lee on May 6, 2020, allowing a governing body to hold meetings by electronic or other means of communication without a quorum being physically present if the governing body determines that meeting by electronic means is necessary to prevent the spread of COVID-19 or other related epidemics to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public and members of the governing body. All votes taken during this meeting will be by roll call vote.
Thank you. And that means that we'll go ahead and do roll call.
Yes. Chair Smith?
Present.
Commissioner Harwell?
Present.
Commissioner George? Commissioner Dorsch?
John?
And Commissioner Samuels?
Present.
John, you're on mute. I think you're here. Okay. So the first item on the agenda is approval of minutes. If everybody's had a chance to review the minutes, I will entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Chair Smith?
Approved.
And Commissioner Harwell?
Approved.
Commissioner Dorsch?
Approved.
And Commissioner Samuels?
Approved.
All right, thank you. I have nothing from the chair's report this time.
Okay. All right, thank you, Chair Smith. We have no items for approval. We do have some informational items that we want to walk through with commissioners, and we have some great speakers here. And Reese, is she here? Where'd she go? Oh, okay.
She's hiding behind.
All right. So we had a different seat for her. I was like, oh, no. All right, Reese, turned over to you.
I'm up here. This is where I am. I've been up here a while, and I'm in this format.
Good morning.
I just want to give you an update on talent acquisition, on the HR things, and we'll start with talent acquisition. We have 339 active employees. Year to date, we've hired 73. We have two positions currently advertised, one for the director of terminal and landside facilities, that will be reported today, VP of maintenance and operations, Tom Biff, and then a manager of accounting, that will report.
commissioners, when we went through this budget drill, you recall that we froze the positions that are talked about on the very bottom. And then we also talked about that we had identified as a staff 8 critical positions. 6 of those 8 are filled, and those 2 that Curry's just mentioned are the final 2 of that 8 that we wanted to fill the gaps with. Thank
you. This course discusses our workforce diversity and the various bars identified, the gray bars identify the Davidson County and Nashville metropolitan statistical areas. The blue bar identifies the MNAA total employees, and then the gold bar represents our recent hires from fiscal year 2019 and fiscal year 2020. And so as we look at the different categories, you see the our population, the blue bar under male identifies our population of male employees being higher than both the Nashville and the Davidson County Metropolitan Statistical Area. And I think that makes sense based on kind of the makeup of the jobs that we have here. And then from under the female category, our employee population, the blue bar, does not keep pace with the Davidson County and Nashville Metropolitan Statistical Area, again, for the same reason. But you do see that the gold bar there does demonstrate our efforts in the last couple of fiscal years to really hire females.
If I could just compliment Carice on that. When you look at the tabular data on the bottom, we were always high with males because we said 2/3 of our employees were in maintenance and public safety. And that's harder to find the female candidates. And then when you look at what she's added in terms of 3 in maintenance and 6 in public safety, that's what's given us the gold bar to show that the female percentages have started to come up and males have dropped a little bit. So that's huge. So thank you.
And then as we look over to the remaining bars, you see that under the Black or African American category, the blue bar, so our current employee population, as well as the gold bar, which is our recent hires, are outpacing the Nashville MSA, and we still have some work there to do to overtake the Davidson County MSA, but in the category of other, our recent hires, and possibly the total employee count is outperforming these MSAs. In terms of talent development, I just wanted to highlight that our 5 apprentices that started in March began school in May. And so this is them at Tennessee College of Applied Technology observing social distancing for the picture, as well as getting their masks with the representative from TCAD, as well as their supervisor. And then, lastly, I want to talk about kind of COVID-19 and the impact on the workforce. We've been fortunate that none of our MNAA employees have tested positive for COVID-19, so we're excited and feel fortunate for that. In terms of obviously all of the career fairs and activities were canceled for the entire quarter, so we don't have much in terms of outreach there, but we have been responding to COVID-19 in terms of the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. We have received more than 25 requests for employees needing to take leave because of their illness or to quarantine for issues related to childcare, and so we've been managing through those. Of course, we are implementing a back to business plan that applies to employees, tenants, and our business partners. We have about 78 employees that are working remotely, and we are beginning to transition those employees back into the workforce starting on Monday. And then, of course, we are updating our policies and procedures. What questions do you have?
Can I ask about I guess this is not for Clarice, but the 7 to 8 employees that you're transitioning back, even though we're still in phase 2 of the city, any reason for the timing of phasing them back in?
We're not saying all 78 come back at once. We publish our back to business plan, and then on the executive team, what we have communicated is we need the supervisors that are currently working from home. So some of our offices, like for example, say Carissa's or Jack's, you know, there's nobody in there. We need the supervisor to come back and look at it from the perspective of the employee to see whether or not your desk is too close to my desk. What kind of arrangements do we make? So it's sort of a phase. They're not all like come flying back. We don't know what we need to still move around. Like all these say chair, where things can be. So I'm not an expert in their office. So we've asked those supervisors to come back, start looking out and tell us what needs, you know, where do you think there's going to be a problem with the three of us coming back and sitting right next to each other? And so we don't have that worked out yet. So that's really what we're talking about. There's no pressure externally that you have to be here at work as long as you can. You can come back to work if you'd like to, and you can maintain these distances.
The other question I have for me, Madam Chair, I guess this is a Gail question. I think on two previous slides, there were 46 staff persons that were eliminated. When you look at the augmentation plan that we had, and I know we front-loaded that in certain areas, how does that affect other areas that were being phased in later on in the process? So if you're, we added a lot of construction on the front end, so there wouldn't have been any positions cut. But if you're adding a Margaret's area on the second phase and that was cut, that would have a major effect on our area, because our area is very small compared to construction. So did we do that analysis?
Yeah, I think we've done some of that. Most of the positions from the meetings that we had with the senior staff and the executive staff that we chose not to fund was because we were looking for a $4 or $5 million savings at that point. But each of the executive staff members had the opportunity to say what's critical, and that's where we came up with that. At a minimum, these 8 have to be filled. And so we kept that going. The question for us is, and I think Marge brought this up in May when she presented the budget, is, you know, right now the curve looks pretty decent. We're still well below our average, but if we get flying again, those positions, we will have to come back to the board, you know, because when we say we eliminate them, we're not saying we don't ever need them again. We just harvested that money. So if we outperform the forecast, we will probably have to come back to the commissioners and say we would like to add 15 of the 46 back in, and here's the most critical. So we're looking at it from that perspective. They're not like, they're gone from, as far as margin are concerned, they're gone. But as we all look, we agreed as a executive and senior staff, if we outperform and we get back up to 18 million passengers really quick and we think we're going north, we're gonna have to add those positions back in. All right. Now this gentleman, young man, Jack Thomas, thinks that we had car accidents, we had COVID, we had all kinds of things since he arrived here. And he has been a great addition to our team. But this is really the first time we wanted to bring him back and introduce him to the full board. But here he is in person, and we're going to let him tell you what's going on at the BBD department. And he has been a great addition to our team. So, Jack, I'll turn it over to you.
All right. Well, good morning, everyone. And it's a little more interesting than that, because when I got here this morning, my badge was not working in the parking lot, and I had difficulty getting up to the building, so I didn't know someone was telling me something.
I don't know why that's everybody's first thought, but I think it too. Every time I swipe it, if it's green, okay, I'm here for another day.
But thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this morning about my favorite stuff, which is small minority women business participation in the aviation industry. So on this particular chart, you'll see our spend with the community for fiscal years 15 through 20 can see that our year-to-date has been about $183 million spent with the small minority women business community, which we think is pretty good. In terms of the trending for as you can see, for 15 and 16, Hill Creek steady start to increase in 17 with the coming on board of vision projects. Then in 19, we really started to take off, and then you can see in 20, where we are at almost $65 million. What's not shown is some of the years preceding fiscal year 15, we were at about $35 million, I believe, for those firms. And so we're really headed in a positive direction here. On the right, you'll see the percent of expenditures over the same period of time, and pretty steady, but here we are at 20, fiscal year 20, we're at 22% of our total spend. So. Which is pretty good, but we're not resting on that. We know that we have plenty of other work to do, a lot of work to be done, and we work hard at it each and every day.
And I wanted to just comment before we get off of this slide for commissioners, as most commissioners recall, when we started the B&A Vision Program, the SMWVE was approximately 16+%. And 4% for small got us to around 20. And so Hensel Phelps and Messer have really done a great job, in my opinion, of helping us elevate our game in terms of the SMWPE program. And then subsequently, when Gail has the opportunity to get up later and talk to you a little bit about the disparity study where we're at, just look at that slide on the left where you see spend in 17 and 18, and then imagine if you drew a line there. The data for the disparity study was back from FY18 and before. So you can see from 19 and 20, where we've already far exceeded what the data from the disparity study talks about. And just in context, when you hear some of that stuff, I think that that's a positive trend that Jack just mentioned, that we're continuing to learn and grow. Thanks, Jack.
In terms of our outreach, these are some of the activities that we have, our department has been involved in this year. Most notably, as you see in April, we're starting to re-engage some of our partners here. There was a second session in Frankfort, and as Doug mentioned, Hensel Phelps has been a very good partner with us. And we reached back to them, and we're starting to provide Hensel Phelps and some of our contractors with technical assistance around various aspects of the Air Force MWDE program. In May, you'll see that we had a session with Colette Hogan Associates. Colette is one of the nation's leading attorneys working in the area of public procurement, affirmative action in public contracting. She provided us with a session on legal standards for our MWDB program. So what we're trying to do is develop our staff. We have a relatively young staff in terms of experience with the programs, and so we're investing in our young people so that we are properly have a proper foundation for our programs. On the right, you'll see some of the impacts that the COVID-19 has had on some of our events. Our signature event business taking off was canceled this year, as was our rental car supplier diversity event. That's an annual event that has taken place in the industry. This would have been the second year for that. So we reach out to the rental car industry to talk about how we can get more involvement of the minority women business community in that particular case. And then the AMAC annual conference scheduled for this year has been postponed until next year. One of the things that COVID-19 has done, though, is given us an opportunity to look for ways to, again, provide some professional development for our our members on our team. So we're doing some things virtually. So what's not shown on here is we've got sessions coming up this week with Turner on good faith efforts from a contractor's perspective. We've got a session coming up with Ferrovio next week on looking for opportunities for small businesses in the design build environment, which is what we find ourselves in with some of the vision projects. Our orientation pretty much as supplier diversity professionals in our PDD program has been designed, bid, build, which is a different delivery system than what we have here for some of our large projects. And so it requires some additional training and education and perspective for us to be effective in our role in serving the community and serving the airport. So we're pretty excited about some of the professional development things that we are, that we have scheduled, and we will continue to do those as we move forward. Another upcoming event nationally is the FAA National Civil Rights Training for Airport. That'll be in August. And again, this will be an online virtual session, which normally takes, this event normally takes place physically in Washington, D.C. Okay, now this is taking off again, which I mentioned earlier, is our signature event. We're looking to do that next year in March. Haven't quite good enough this year yet to do this virtually. We attended or participated in a similar event a couple of weeks ago with BWI Airport. And they did a pretty good job with delivering the information. We think we can do it better than they do. So we want to continue to investigate some of the platforms that are out there to see what's possible.
And the switch over one slot, that's just a picture of last year's where we had been traditionally doing it at the airport. Marriott, I think the Vita's team set a record just short of 400 in the high 300s. In terms of participation, March was the planned date. Obviously, that's when the pandemic hit us. March is a strategic date for us because we're normally coming to the board in the April time period, April, May, for approval of the budgets. And so we're sort of letting the business community know what we anticipate is about to be approved in the budget. So if Jack and the team are able to pull off a virtual one by the rest of this year, that would be a great informational, you know, opportunity for committee members or for participants to see what we're doing. But if we do it for next year, we're really giving them a preview to what's in the FY22 budget. So maybe both work, but hopefully we can get back and have that in-person connection again next year sometime, and we'll need to coordinate a date to lock in a venue big enough to hold everybody for sure. Okay, any other questions for Jack and the Business Diversity Department?
I just wanted to welcome him since it's the first time that he's presented to the board. I can tell you that when people found out that Jack was coming to get Florida, I can't tell you the number of calls I've got nationwide of the excitement of him coming. And so we just wanted to welcome you to Nashville.
No pressure.
We just didn't want him to think the pandemic was following or anything. So we have not been trying to hide him. We do appreciate his experience and leadership because the organization that Gail started is set up in the BDD department. Additional personnel, more structure, and then we brought the leader in to help get that moving forward. So we're thankful for Jack here.
And you just referenced additional personnel. Jack, how does this office compare to your office in St. Louis in terms of size?
Smaller, a little less experience. I think in St. Louis, it's been a while since I was at the airport, but I did keep up with what was going on there. I think the airport has somewhere between 12 and 14 people, probably four or five people involved in the certification program, the remainder in compliance, both on the airport concession side and the construction side, a couple of clerical people, a little more seasoned staff in St. Louis. Here, I have three people that have combined less than a year's experience in the aviation industry, which is why we're also investing heavily in the professional development side. It takes probably a couple of years at least to develop a good certification compliance person. So we've got a ways to go, but yeah, but in terms of numbers, about half or so, what we have.
Yeah, and a little less than that. And as commissioners are aware of that, you know, we were small and we've almost doubled where we were. And so how many total, including yourself, are in the department right now?
There are five.
Five. So, I mean, it was started with just two, and then we have two managers, and then we're looking to hire we have the certification specialist below that, I believe is the correct title. So we do have a ways to go with the volume, because that's a constant from Robert and Margaret and everything. We need to do the volume of projects we have, trying to get that all done at time is a challenge for us. So. Okay, anything else for Jack? All right, next up is Gail to discuss the disparity study. Thank you, Jack.
I'm excited to announce that we are at the finish line for the disparity study. That's been a long, hard road, but we want to make sure we get everybody. And we've worked really, really hand in hand with GSPC to make sure that we have that. So a brief recap of the project is listed on the slide. And we received the final document from GSPC on June 2nd. And so our next steps are that GSPC will submit updated goals based on the disparity study. The staff will finalize our communication plans. We're working with Tom and his team on that. And we will present the disparity study to the board in the July-August timeframe. Although the disparity study contains an executive summary in the body of the study, I'd ask GSPC to pull that out and make that a separate document for us. And they were more than happy to do that. And you'll be seeing that. So GSPC found that there's still a disparity between our marketplace and our utilization of that marketplace. The statistical analysis indicates that the disparity was likely caused by race, ethnicity, or gender scales. You'll notice that each point on the slide contains a point of contact. And so those are the departments that are going to be primarily responsible for executing these recommendations. And we'll continue to promote and implement programs, of course, to increase MWBE utilization. Risk management is working with business diversity development to review bonding and insurance requirements. Site visits currently have not been easily conducted, you can imagine, with the virus. But Jack and his team are innovative, and they came up with ways to do that virtually. And so they've been continuing with that. We will continue to communicate projects to the community, and as we talked about our outreach events, when we get back up to speed, you know, or otherwise. And I know that Jack has been innovative again with looking at ways we can do this. Our 27 study, we had 9 recommendations. And then in the 2014 study, we had 14. And then this past study, we had 5 recommendations.
I could just, I'm not, that couple on there, Caleb. I did ask when we went through this as our initial look, as they're trying to finalize the data for the chair and committee members, is the parentheses and then bold is our discussion. So that's not a recommendation by Griffin and Strong. I wanted to, you know, when this comes out, already have departments identified that are going to start working on these issues. Some of them are hard to categorize, you know, how to correct them, because they don't give us a specific number, or it's hard to figure out what the goal is. So I do have to put on my hat and go back, because this is from 2018 data, because I see what we're doing today. And so, you know, increasing site visits and follow up with, you know, with subcontractors, number four, I think we're doing that. But if we're not doing it well enough, how much is that before that becomes an item that is, you know, closed in the future? So those are, you know, stuff like in reviewing the bonding and insurance requirements. Well, that, I mean, now we have an AVP of risk management, and insure limits are not higher than necessary, you know, or consider bond waivers for small projects. That really is how much risk does the airport want to take. So we're not trying to do it to exclude anybody, but we got to figure out what that balance is, you know, to determine, you know, what we should set limits on. So I think those are some great discussions that we'll have going forward in the committee. And I know, you know, Chairman Samuels and I have spent a lot of time on discussing these issues and how to, you know, close out recommendations. And I would, you know, I would say we're working on every one of these today. And I think 19 to 20 is obviously better in terms of dollars and what we're doing, but how do I get where we can say we're the IT program kind of thing? That's the thing that we'll want to get to. So
Caleb, you go to slide 19, I didn't catch all the information on 19.
I had a question about that as well. So not that I'm a statistician, but it's from statistically significant in the staff course that I did have, I feel like it signifies a certain thing, right? Which is X number, numerator, denominator equals percent. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be interested in understanding their statistical significance with what those numbers mean. And again, identifying the fact that these were 2018, right, cutoff numbers. And then from, because just saying something and then not providing the data to back it up to me is can be, misleading or confusing, I would say. The other thing I would say in the five recommendations that they have, and it looks like you guys have already got a jump start on this with signing them, but it's really what's our business plan around that, and going to Doug's point, for instance, on number four, increased site visits. Is there a way to tell what type of community outreach that we did in 2018? 17. I don't know that there is. I don't know if it's tracking that, but you know what not only are we doing, and to your point, like, and what are other cities doing that might have a greater impact that you could, you know, help us with, but just sheer volumes of showing up isn't necessarily either a high impact business item to me. So I think that's the other thing is, you know, are we going to the right events to talk about your department and what we're doing and procurement and the business side. So volume activity doesn't mean work, efficient work, right? So I think it's not just, oh, we went to 12 this year, which means we need to go to 15 next year. What are we doing and what's the business purpose and what are the metrics that we say makes an impactful event? So I think those are all things we need to consider, not just volume.
Absolutely. To your first point about the statistical significance, this isn't an update for the board. When we present the final, which will be, you know, in July or August, you will have all of that data, and they will present, you know, Griffin Strong will be here to present that and answer questions in terms of, you know.
I think that's the main reason why it's not finalized right now, because we want to know what is the statistical difference. Are we off by 1%, 2%, or what's changed, you know, in the market, and how are we not performing? And just something for commissioners to think about. At least I'm ruminating about it, as Tom Jerkovich, you know, when we did the economic impact study and said we had done $7 billion, you know, of activity in 2018. Well, we kept the firm on a retainer so they could update how's 19 going. And I'm almost wondering if that's something down the road that we should consider for the disparity study to see, why do we probably don't, I would like to know, am I doing good in 19? Am I doing good in 20? You know, if we had ongoing statistical sharing of what we're doing, they could give us a trend now, because I feel like we are doing better than 19, 20, but within what they saw in 18, but I can't prove it, and I need to wait 3 more years to get that data again.
That's the problem with these studies, there's such lacking information.
Yeah, so.
Or you could hire a data analysis at the BDD office and they can track that.
Correct, and that's part of what the suggestion that has been in the past, is how do we get somebody that can do data that can get in there and help us with that. So.
That's all right, so conclusions. MNAA has not achieved substantial period awarding contracts to NWDE firms, and we will, you know, dig into those statistics certainly. We do have a set of significant focus on centralizing our data and utilizing our B2G tool. Jack has done a great, you know, has a great start with. This is going to be the tool that we use to gather information, because we have data sitting in different areas. It's been, frankly, a struggle to get data. And Jack, has, like I said, has done a really great job with focusing the team. Okay, this is what we're going to do. This is the tool we're going to use to get our data, so that we, you know, we have some really good information for the future. Jack has also created metrics to track the progress of outreach activities. You know, things like the number of site visits, certification applications processed, amount of diversity spent by department, as well as many, many others that I won't go into here, but he's, you know, a seasoned professional. He knows the market, and he will be getting us that data for sure in the future. And then to finalize, HR will be working with BDD to draft diversity and inclusion policy. And with that, I conclude my remarks. Questions?
I do want to add, I know Gail is fairly new and Jack is new, but I do appreciate Jack's leadership as he's come in, because Commissioner Smith and Chair Smith and Chairman Samuels, we have talked about those, going back up one second, sorry, those bottom through bullets for a while. So that was one of the first things that Jack did when he got here, is it's okay, B2G. Is going to be the database of a sort. We have provided, you know, the resources in the previous years to make the modifications to B2G to help us with data, but coming in and having the leadership in there to say make B2G the centralized system, I think is smart on our part, but also creating metrics so we can to, you know, track our own progress as we go forward, and maybe the data analysis person is somebody that we gotta figure out how, you know, who's the expert that's gonna be able to crunch that information. And with Gail and Carice, we have been talking about that, you know, developing a diversity and inclusion policy. And we think that'll help answer some of the issues that are out there. So that's just my perspective. I would love to hear any questions or comments that commissioners might have.
You know, we could spend 2 hours talking about that last bullet. I think it really goes beyond just a policy and beyond what Greece can do. I think policy is just a beginning of the phase, but I think it really starts beyond the chiefs in terms of addressing that perception. For looking out of policy.
Yeah, I think that the toughest thing, I think we do have the commitment to do the right thing by the organization, to lead the city, you know, from the airport's authority perspective, but we're at a, it's hard to be that leader if you don't even have a defined policy, so that's the one of the first things that somebody will ask is, do you have a diversity inclusion policy? And I'm like, no, I've been using that through the Leadership Nashville program to get access to other companies' policies and have to make a priority and publish it and then try to live it from there.
But you have a non-discrimination policy, so how would that differ from this policy? So how would that differ from this policy, the non-discrimination policy? That's just a nomenclature to me. Non-discrimination versus diversity and inclusion. It's one of the same.
I don't think people are asking us that question from that perspective. Do you have a non-discrimination? I don't know if that's changing, that this is more of the current vernacular or not, but, I don't know that we address all the things that at least others have been asking about, so.
It feels like when you just even use the term, and I'm definitely not the expert on this, but non-discrimination feels like it's, we're not going to do this. When you talk about a D&I policy, this tells me this is what we're proactively doing. So it's one is like an opt out, and the other feels like this is a word brace, like a proactive stance to be more welcoming. And I know we discussed that on another board that I'm on, actually writing the DNI policy and making sure that was posted to our website, because it was really a more active, visible conversation. And we wanted people to know that, hey, we are thinking about this. This is important to us. And it's, like I said, it's more of a rather than saying, okay, well, we're not going to do these terrible things. So, and I would say that, hearing Jack talk about the other experience he's had, and I think having an opportunity to build out, even though you got to start from scratch, but it sounds like the opportunity to build something rather than actually just come into something that's preset that you might have to change the way things are done or opinions, or it's really an opportunity to build your own shop, if you will, in his department. And I think that would be, that's a nice way to help bring new talent in and you create that infrastructure. So.
And the EEOC policy is a compliance sort of issue. And I view this as our culture, And so now we've got BDD and we've got HR working together on a cultural message. For the organization, or the EEOC, the HR handbook, things like that, that's more of a compliance issue. Although it is also, our commitment, but it is, more on the compliance side. This is more our culture. This is our overall, what we want to achieve as an organization. And it was very important to me too when I hired the role of Jack's role, that there was some understanding on that person's part, and Chris can attest to this, that they did understand HR as well, because I wanted those two things to marry in this organization. I thought that was very important, because it's one message, it's different facets of the same thing. And so, I just can't tell you how we have AI and check. Let's do that. And Chris as well. We want you to.
Any other comments or commissioner questions or concerns?
Thank you. All right. That being said, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Mm-hmm.